Today's share in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Ksubos, Daf Ayin Beis. Now, we're going to begin at the bottom of Ayin Aleph Omud Beis with the Gemara. We read through the Mishnah yesterday towards the bottom of the Daf, and we'll just remind ourselves of the Mishnah as we go through the Gemara, because it's really going to, as we had said in a lot of things yesterday, Mefarish B'Gemara, Mefarish B'Gemara, so we'll remind ourselves of this as we go through it. Now, we start with the Gemara. It says, HaGufa Kasha. It's going to say that there seems to be an internal contradiction in the Mishnah, which we pointed out yesterday. The Mishnah said that if Amadir is Ishto, if a man goes and makes something also to his wife, how does he do this? So we had mentioned previously that a person can make something also to his wife by either saying that if she goes and visits her husband, as the case is, so then something would be also to her. For example, it would be also for her to have a tashmish with him, or to get some hanoah from his estate. So in any event, he is asuring with a neder something to his wife, such as not visiting her husband. So the first part of the Mishnah said that it would be a 1 month period of time, so that she could put up with. But if it was a 2 month period of time, the implication is that that would be too much, and she would be able to demand the ksuba. So now that's what the Gemara says. This seems to be an internal contradiction with this statement that I just said and the next statement of the Mishnah. So let's read the Gemara. Haguf akasha seems to be internally contradictory. Amris, first we say, regel echod yikayim. If the vow that the husband had forced on his wife was that she's not allowed to go visit her father who lives in the city, is a chodesh yamim. If it was just 1 month, so then chodesh echod yikayim. So then we don't force the husband to give the wife a divorce. But if it's shnayim, if he says you can't go there for a 2 month period of time, so then yotzi v'yitink suba. Then the wife can demand if she wants that the husband divorce her. Basically, we'll force that, and she's entitled to get her ksuba. But then it said, "Ubizman shehu be'ir acharis." If her father lives in a different city, so then we said it was for 1 month period of time. So then we don't force the marriage to break up if that's what she wants, and she wouldn't be allowed to go and demand the beis din, have her husband divorced, and she should get a ksuba. But then instead of saying if it's shnayim yotzi v'yitein ksuba, it says shlosha yotzi v'yitein ksuba. So again, why is it 1 month and then acceptable, 2 months not acceptable, and then 1 month acceptable, and then 3 months not acceptable? So seems to be an internal contradiction. So the Gemara says, Hoshnaim Yosef Yitink Suba. In the first situation, it seems that the second month she can demand it, but in the next situation, Amos Seif, it says Shlosh Yosef Yitink Suba, implying Hoshnaim Yikayim. So why is there a difference? In the first part of the Mishnah, it says one acceptable, two not acceptable. And in the second part of the Mishnah, the Seifa, as we call it, it said one is acceptable, and three is not acceptable, implying that two is acceptable. Amos Seifa, Shlosh Yotzi Yitink Suba, Hoshnaim Yikayim. So Abaye explains, Seifa, Asa LeKohenis. The Seifa is going with the opinion, the Rabbi Yehuda, that we learned in yesterday's Shia, that when we're concerned about being Machzir Grushaso with a Kohen who's not allowed to go and take back his wife no matter what, so then we want to make sure that we have a little bit of an extra opportunity to make sure that the marriage isn't broken up, because if this marriage breaks up with a divorce, it's forever broken up. If it's a Yisrael, so if he makes a mistake, so as long as his wife didn't get married to somebody else, he can be Machzir Grushaso, it's Hetu Gomer, as long as she didn't get married to somebody else. But with a Kohen, no matter what, once he divorces his wife, he's never allowed to take her back. Therefore, the Seifa of the Reisha of the Mishnah is referring to the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. So it's not mutually contradictory. It's talking about a different scenario. The Reisha is talking about a Yisrael, and the Seifa of the Reisha is talking about a woman who's married to a Kohen. That's Teretz number one. Teretz number two, Rabba bar Ula mar lo kasha. There's no stira. Kan bi redufa, kan bi she'ena redufa. What does redufa mean? So Rashi's understanding is redufa, di ramaskal redufa, is a leilech lebei sovia tomit. So when she's constantly going to her father's house, so then 1 month is the most that we'll accept. If he asks us if we're going there for 2 months, shnayim yotzi. She ain't no redufa. But if the woman doesn't so often go to her father's house, so then we say, okay, 2 months is, quote, acceptable. Beyond that, 3 months, that would not be acceptable. So therefore, in that situation, where she's ain't no redufa, shnayim is acceptable, shnayim yikayim. So that's Rabbi Bar Ula's answer. Tosfos is a different way of understanding it. We'll leave it nice and simple like Rashi right now. Okay. Now, we Darsh in the following pasuk. It says, "Oz ha'yisi be'enav kimotzeis shalom." So the pasuk that we're bringing down over here from Shir HaShirim, which is of course an analogy between the relationship between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it says that we become in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's eyes, "Oz ha'yisi be'enav kimotzeis shalom," like someone who's found to be shalom, somebody who's found to be in a state of shalom, a state of peace, or some suggest that this means a state of perfection. Okay, so what does that pasuk mean? Amar Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan says this is analogous to kekala shenimtzes shleima beveis chamiya. This is analogous to a daughter-in-law who finds herself very, very happy in the house of her father-in-law, and she can't wait to go and tell redufa leilech lagid shvacha beveis aviya. She just can't wait to get home, tell her father how happy she is in her father-in-law's house. In those days, they used to move in when they got married into the father-in-law's house. So she's living in her husband's family's house, and she can't wait to go back home to her father and tell him, wow, they're treating me so nicely. It's such a beautiful relationship. Baruch Hashem, things are going well. So that's this lashon of redufa, that she can't wait to go back to her father's house. We darsh in a similar idea from a pasuk in Hosea. The pasuk says, "Vayava yamahu nu Hashem." In those days, Hakadosh Baruch Hu said, "Tikri ishi." The Klai Yisrael, in the analogy again, Hakadosh Baruch Hu is the husband, and Klai Yisrael is the wife. So, in Hosea, this pasuk describes the relationship between the husband, Hakadosh Baruch Hu, as described as Hakadosh Baruch Hu is ishi. That's what Hashem says. You will be called Tikri ishi. You will call me your husband. Ishi is a more dear term. It's a nicer term. Philosophically, Bali, as opposed to, you'll refer to me as Bali. Bali implies an ownership almost to a certain extent. Bali is a less nicer term than Ishi. So I'm Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan again, Darshan's over here. He says, this is again, Kekala Beveis Chamiya, Velo Kekala Beveis Aviya. That will be described as the Kala living in the father-in-law's house, meaning after the Nisuin, they would move from their own father's house where they lived during the Erisin period of time still, and they would move into their father-in-law's house with their husband during the period of time after the Nisuin. So she would be described as Ishi. That's a closer relationship below Kekala to Vesavia, and not like the Kala still living in her own father's house while she's in Arusa. The Ben Yehuda adds over here, and he says that Bala implies that there's still two jurisdictions over her. She's still in her father's jurisdiction, but she's still also in her new husband's jurisdiction in terms of how far is the Dorim. While she's in Arusa, she makes an Eder, so both her father and her new husband both have to go and be made for the Neder. Neither one alone can be made for the Neder. But once she moves into her father-in-law's house, i.e. after the Nisun takes place, then she's fully under the jurisdiction of her husband, in the sense that he's the only one that can be made for in a Dorim anymore. And the Ben Yehuda says this is analogy to the Olam HaEmes. So while we're in this world, we have the Eitzah Tov and we have the Eitzah Hara. Both have Shlita over us. We're both under their jurisdiction, and it's for us to decide, so to say, which way to go. But once we're in Olam HaBa, so only the Eitzah Tov will have jurisdiction over us. Okay. Now we quote the Mishnah. It said, HaMadris Ishto. Second part of the Mishnah was that the husband were to make a vow. Again, he forces a vow upon his wife by either saying that if you go to these two places, such as the Beis Ovel or the Beis Mishnah, like the Mishnah says, so then you'll be also to benefit from my properties, or you'll be also to benefit from Tashmish from me. So that's how the husband, again, is Madiris Ishto. He can make a neder onto his wife. So Gemara says, what's so terrible about making a neder that his wife can't go to the Beis Ovel? Sounds like it's not the worst thing in the world. So what is Bishlam of Beis Mishteh to say that your wife, you ask her to go to a wedding party, go to a Mishteh, so we can understand why that's something that's very bad. And we turn to Ayin Beis Omud Aleph. Because in this situation, Ika Noel Bifanel, he's closing off the door to her. As Rashi says, Delishal Simcha, he's locking the door. He's not allowing her into a Beis Mishteh. So he's basically saying, you can't have a good time. And therefore, he's causing her difficulty. So we can understand why, if the husband does that for a significant period of time, that the woman can demand a divorce and get her ksuba. However, if the husband says, I ask you to go to Beis Avel, no, what's so terrible about that? Ella Beis Avel, man noel bifanel ika. How is that, so to say, impairing her life? And that's such a thing that she can go and demand a divorce and be entitled to her ksuba. It doesn't sound like it's so terrible. Beis Mishteh, yes, but Beis Avel, no. So where it says, no. We learn the following b'raisa, Tana, L'mochor Himesa. Everybody at 120 is going to leave this world. So she realizes that there's a day going to come that she's going to die. And nobody is going to come to her funeral. The Ein Kol Birya Softa, because she never went to anybody else's Beis Avel. So therefore, quid pro quo, nobody's going to want to come and be maspid her. As Rashi said, Yitain El Libo, Shafhu Yispidu, V'lo Yera Lo Imnoag Kain. This is actually Rashi going on in the upcoming Gemara, but it's appropriate to say it over here. She realizes that if she doesn't go to anybody's Beis Avel, that nobody's going to come to her funeral and eulogize her. Alternatively, instead of the word softa, somehow the gear of the arme ain't called birya sofna. Sofna, Rashi says, is a lotion of burial. So the word sofna means kovra. Kishem shelo gom lo chesed. She didn't do a chesed to go do nicham aveilim on anybody else. So nobody's going to come to do a chesed to her. Kach lo yigmalu ima. So there'll be nobody there to bury her. So that's why it's considered a terrible tsar. And for a longer period of time, she can demand a divorce and get entitled to her ksuba if her husband forbids her to go to a beis avil. Now, the Gemara darshens this a little bit further with the following brisa, Tanya. Rabbi Meir would say, what does the pasuk mean when it tells us, famous pasuk from Kohelis, Tov lelechas al beis avil, it's much better to go to the house of an avil, to go to a shiva house, milechas al beis mishter, rather than to go to the house of a party, in other words, a wedding. Beis mishter is a euphemism that we use over here for a wedding. So, famous pasuk in Kohelis tells, better go to a shiva house than to a wedding. Because Asher who sov kol adam, since the bottom line is everybody at 120 is going to leave this world, b'chayit in alivo, the live person will realize that and he'll say, listen, this is going to be my situation one day at this beis avil, and it'll be a tremendous musa for the person. It'll be a tremendous opportunity to spur the person to improve their life, as opposed to a wedding party. So yeah, you'll have enjoyment at the shmog, but after that, you gain nothing in terms of musr, in terms of spurring you to be a better person. So therefore, when you go to a beis avil, you say, listen, one day I'm going to be the person that everybody's mourning about, and therefore a person can use this as an opportunity to improve his situation. So in addition, that's the simple understanding. So Rav Meir darshan it as follows: My v'chayitin alibo. It means dvarim shomisa. The person when he goes to the beis avil will think about death. So it will think about death in terms of doing tshuva, but also it will make him want to go and assist other people in life and be a gomu chesed, because he'll realize the sofat. If I go and participate in the eulogies for the dead person, yispidunei, then they will also go and have people come to be maspid me at 120. And the kavar, if I go and help bury other people, yikberunei, they will go and come to bury me at 120. The dal, if I go and cry, Rashi says, Deidal is heirim kolo bivchi ubimismein. If I mourn, if I am saddened, if I sob at somebody else's levaya, then yidlunei. So they will come and do the same for me. And finally, the levai. So Rashi explains the levai means levaya es hamita. So if I go and accompany the coffin to the burial site, to the cemetery, so then they will yilavunei. They will come and do the same to me. And finally, the ton, if I go and carry the coffin to the grave, physically carry it, so then yitanunei, so then people will do the same for me. So that's what it means, hachayitin alibo. A person realizes that if you don't treat other people properly, especially around the burial, so then nobody will do the same for you. So that's the chiddush over here of it's better to be at the beis avil, because that will spur you to be a better person than at the beis mishnah. Okay. We quote the mishnah, it says, v'mayatoein mishum dovaracha. Now, all of these things was the husband seemingly made this neder on his wife without a reason. So then, after a certain period of time, let's say 1 month, so then if it's longer than that, so the husband is doing something incorrect, and the wife can go demand that the husband divorce her based and will force that, and she's entitled to her ksuba. But if he has a good reason, he says, no, I'm not just doing this stam. I have a very good reason why I'm telling you not to go to this mishnah, base mishnah, or to this base avel. So Rashoi, then the husband, we quoted the mishnah, does have the right to make such a neder on his wife. Nu, my dover acher, what is this good reason that he has? So Amar Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Yehuda Amar Shmuel tells us, Mishu b'nei adam prutzin, shemitzuyim sham, because it's an inappropriate activity. They're going to be immoral persons, inappropriate people, inappropriate behavior going on. Proofs of people that are acting with immorality are there, and the last thing he wants to do is have his wife be in the presence of those people. So Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel says, if the husband has a good reason, he's rashoi to go and tell her you can't go to those places. However, on Rashi says that's only true that this statement of Yehuda Amar Shmuel that the Dover Acher is if they're Prutzim is if they're known to be Prutzim. he only said this Lomar and Elodis Chazik. You know, this is a guarantee. This place is well known as a place of ill repute. However, Avalois Chazik, local community. But if he's just saying, listen, I've heard that people get drunk at weddings and then do inappropriate, immoral things, so I don't want you going to the wedding. And I know at this base level that sometimes I've heard that there's inappropriate behavior, so then he can't say that. Local community. It's not up to the husband to go and make such gezeiros, so to say, well beyond anything that's established. No, if it's established, so then he has the right to say, don't go there. But if it's not established, then he doesn't have the right to forbid his wife to go to a wedding and forbid his wife to go to a shiva house. Then we quote the Mishnah. It said, V'imamalah menashe tomri, etc. We said in the Mishnah that if the husband says, I'm making this nether on you, and I'm asking this on you, unless you go and tell somebody what you told me in private, or what I told you in private, you have to go and tell that other person. The Gemara says, V'tema. So why are we making a big deal about it? So the husband asks you to go tell him, so go tell him. So the Gemara says, no, because this would be embarrassing. Or Yehuda Mishmuel says, Devarim Shokolon. We're talking here about something that would be particularly embarrassing. It's a Devarim Shokolon, which the Mefarshim explain, is that we're dealing over here with something that was a personal nature between Beino Leveino. It was a personal nature about maybe their private lives, or it was something that would be embarrassing if she were to say it over to somebody else, either something that she said or something that he said, and therefore she doesn't wish to do so. So if he asks her to do something like this, that's a right for her to go and demand that based then make him give her a divorce, and that she's entitled to a ksuba. Then we quote the Mishnah, or if the husband also makes her do the following, Oshetei Memala Umaarila Ashba, if the husband makes her go and fill up the garbage and take out the garbage, so then that's grounds for divorce. What's it? Why is that grounds for divorce? The Siavit? No. That's part of life. Somebody has to take out the garbage. So why is that grounds of divorce if the husband says, I'm asking Hana on you, unless you go and take out the garbage? Okay, not the best husband-wife relationship, maybe, to make a nether for her to take out the garbage, but that shouldn't be grounds for divorce. So I'm Yehuda Mishmuel. Again, Yehuda Mishmuel is the one that's commenting on a lot of our Mishnah, and he says, no, it doesn't mean that. This is a euphemism. She'tamale v'nofetzes. As Rashi says, l'acha tashmish. They're talking about Raviyah, l'acha shtetishamesh, v'yamale rachma shechwazera. After the husband and she had relations, and she has the zera, his seed inside of her, and he basically tells her, I don't want you to get pregnant, and therefore, and he tells her, basically, go and fill yourself up with liquid. Go and douche. Go and do something that will prevent my zera from making you pregnant. So, in other words, this is like a post-coital type of contraception that he's telling her to do. And in that situation, she can go and say, I demand that based and force this man to give me a get and for me to get my ksuba. Because even though she's not mukhayeves in the mitzvah, pruvu, many say that she's also the Ravid, for example, brings down, as cited by the Ran, that she's also to go and destroy his zara, and therefore she can't participate in such an activity. It's wrong. Others suggest that no, she's entitled to have children if she wants, even though she's not mukhayeves in the mitzvah, pruvu, with the exception of one Tana, we paskin, not like that Tana, that she's technically not mechuyevus in mitzvah pruvu. Of course, when she has children, she's helping her husband to be mekayim the mitzvah pruvu. But if she wishes to have children, that's her halachic right. And therefore, she, if her husband tells her that I want you to destroy the zera inside of you, she has the right to demand a divorce and be entitled to a ksuba. The Masnisa Tana, we learn in the following brisa, a different approach, not like Reuven Mishmuel. The Brisa says, "Shetamali asara kadimayim usarli ashba." That a husband tells her to go fill up 10 buckets of water and then go dump them out in the garbage. So the Gemara says, "Bishlam ulishmuel." The Mishnah makes a lot of sense according to Reuven Mishmuel because mishum hachi yotzi take ksuba. Well, you can understand why that's grounds for a divorce and she can demand to have her ksuba. But according to the Brisa, "El masnisa my nafka lamina no tiavit." Why is it such a terrible thing? You know, husband is not exactly the most loving husband. Say, do me a favor, go and fill up these 10 buckets of water and pour them out into the garbage. Maybe he wants to clean out the garbage area. So, Tiavit, why doesn't she do that? That's not grounds for divorce. So the Bryce says, a little bit difficult to understand. Why should that be grounds for divorce? So the Bryce says, no, it is grounds for divorce. Why? Amar Rabba Bar Rachana, Amar Rav Yochanan, Mipnei Sheniris Kishota. People are going to see her doing this and say, what in the world are you doing? Who dumps water in the garbage area? This woman's crazy. And she doesn't want to be being crazy by everybody else. So the Brisa also makes sense that she can demand a divorce if her husband makes her do something that makes her look foolish. Amar Rav Kahana, Rav Kahana says, Hamadir Zishtov. Again, if a man, so to say, forces a neder upon his wife by saying, if you do this, then you're going to be also in the following hanah from my properties or from Tashush from me, Shalotishal, Shalotashal. if he tells his wife that you are going to be usher in my benefit if you go and borrow something, or if you go and lend something to one of your neighbors, whether it's a napa or kavra, whether a certain type of a sieve, a colander or a strainer of some sort, or a rechai and the tanur, or whether it is some type of a handmill that they used to have, or a tanur or an oven, so she's not allowed to go borrow or lend any of these things, so then that's grounds for divorce as well. Yotzi v'tin ksuba. She could demand based and should ask her husband to give her a get, and she's entitled to a ksuba. Why? Because everybody's going to think she's a terrible person, and she doesn't want to be thought of as a terrible person by everybody else. That's very, very embarrassing for her to have everybody saying, she's very, very stingy person. She never borrows or she never lends from anybody else. She doesn't borrow from anybody else because she knows that then she's going to have to lend to them. And she doesn't lend to anybody because she's a stingy person. So therefore, that is grounds for divorce. Finally, Gemara says we have a brisa that supports what Rav Kahana just said. Again, the Amoraim didn't know all the brises, so Tanya Nami Hachi, the brisa says exactly what Rav Kahana said. It says in more detail, Hamadu is Ishto, Shalotish Avos Ostashio, Nafra Vakavar Rechai Vitanor, and all of these things that we just said, that Rav Kahana said, the brisa says the exact same thing. If the woman is told that you're going to be also in Hanon, the husband makes a nether to her, if you do any of these things, if you lend or borrow things, such as a sieve or a colander, a strainer of some sort, or rechai in the tanur, or this handmill, or sharing your oven, or borrowing an oven, so the woman has the right to say, Yosef, you take ksuba. Husband should give her a divorce, and she gets her ksuba. Why? The nation Messiah, shame rab, shchein osel. Now, that's exactly the quote that Rav Kahana had said, but the Brisa continues and says, v'chein he shenadra. If she were to make such a nether, shelo tisha v'tosashel, I make a nether. The woman can make a nether on herself, saying, I ask myself to go and borrow anything from anybody else or to lend anything to anybody else, such as the nafa, the kavri, rechai, the tanur, these various types of strainers or a handmill or to use my oven or to borrow somebody else's oven. Or she says, v'shelo terog bigodim noyim libonog, or I will not go and weave any clothing for your children. So then, in this situation, the husband has the right to say that she's a morendus, and teitzei shelo b'ksuba. He has the right in that situation to go divorce her and not pay her ksuba. Again, why? Just like before, it would make her look bad, so this makes him look bad. If she doesn't do anything in this nature, so everyone would say it's her husband's fault, her husband's stingy. So therefore, he doesn't want to have a terrible reputation. So if she's the cause of all of these things, so then he has the right to go and divorce her without paying the ksuba. Okay, next Mishnah. Ve'eliyotzo shelo b'ksuba. The following women, Rachmanu Litzlan, if they act in these inappropriate behaviors or manners that the Mishnah is about to outline, so then she's allowed to be divorced by her husband without having him pay the ksuba. So, for example, the Mishnah tells us two things. Overis aldas Moshe and the Yehudis. So this will basically be if somebody goes against a Dvar Torah, the Das Moshe is basically a Doraisa, and Das Yehudis is basically a Derabbanan. That's what the Mishnah says, as Rashi explains. Shenog b'nos Yisrael v'afogav delo ksiva. These are things that, this was the minhag in Klai Yisrael, the holy women of Klai Yisrael, they conducted themselves in this fashion. So if she goes against that holy minhag of the women of Klai Yisrael, so the husband has the right to go and divorce her without paying her ksuba. And certainly, Allah has kamam kama, if she goes against the din d'oraisa. Now what do we mean? Give us examples the Mishnah is going to now do of things that are considered Das Moshe, and what is this Das Yehudis? So, the Ezohi Das Moshe, what are examples of something that's an offense, a transgression, that if the wife does this, the husband can go divorce his wife without giving her ksuba? Again, the husband is not necessarily expected to be a perfect tzaddik, and so too, while we all try to be good, the husband can't expect his wife to be a perfect tzaddik. So if his wife, you know, once did an Aveira, that's not a reason that the husband has the right to go and divorce without giving ksuba. So these are specific things that if the woman does them, the husband can divorce his wife without giving ksuba. These specific things, because ma'achiloso she'enu me'usar, she's affecting him now. So if she goes, gives him foods that is not taking off the trumas and maestros, and she tells him that it is, so she's basically causing him to sin intentionally, tomorrow or less, so don't eat it. So tomorrow we'll explain what the scenario is. But in any event, right now the Mishnah is telling us that she gives him food to eat that doesn't have trumas and maaser taken from it. Or Misham Shato Nida. She goes and has relations with him while she's in Nida. And again, tomorrow we'll explain. If he doesn't know about it, so then how does he ever know about it? And if he knows about it, so then the problem is his. So tomorrow again, we'll explain the Mishnah in much more detail. Likewise, if she goes below kosher lechala, she goes and bakes doughs, which is a chiyuv to take off 1/24th of it and give it to the kohen as a one of the matnos kahuna called chala, and she doesn't do this, and she feeds him something which is tevel, then no deres, or she makes nedarim ve'eino mekayemes, and she doesn't fulfill them. Now, why is that a terrible thing? The Gemara will explain, because that could lead Rachmana Lussan to his children dying, the children that they have, because she does not mekayemes as her nedarim, so that could lead chas v'shalom to children dying. So all of these things are examples of a das Moshe, which if she transgresses these das Moshe, so then the husband has the right to divorce without paying her ksuba. What is examples of ezri das yehudis? What's examples of things that the holy women of Klai Yisrael were noha goes to do? What are these examples that you could divorce your wife if she doesn't do this without paying the ksuba? So yotza v'rosha prua, she goes out without her hair being covered. Obviously, we'll say, why is this a minuk? This is a din. V'tova b'shuk, or some of the girsa, v'tova b'shuk, that she goes and spins her wool in a way in public or going through her thigh, as we'll see in the Gemara, that is inappropriate. Umedaberes imkolodam, she's a woman that goes and speaks to other men, and that could be very inappropriate, so that would be going against the Das Yehudis as well. Abishol adds, Abishol Omer, afim akaleles yolda b'fonav, if she goes and curses her in-laws in front of him. Now, that's what it says right now. The Gemara was saying, even in front of his children. So that's something that's a terrible thing. It may not be a din in the Torah for her to do that, but it certainly is das yudis, improper behavior for a Jewish woman to do that, and that would be grounds for divorce without a ksuba according to Avishal. Rabbi Tarfon adds as well, a hakolanis, if she has a very loud voice. Now, the Gemara will explain exactly what this is. But first, the Mishnah itself explains it to a certain extent. It says, "Ezohi kolanis lukishehi medaberes b'soch beisa." She talks in her house, "Ushchenel shomim kola." But the neighbors can hear it. She talks with such a loud voice. Now, just having a little bit of a loud voice isn't grounds for divorce without a ksuba. So tomorrow we'll expand upon this and say that it's dealing with inyoni tashmish, having to do with relations between the husband and the wife. Now, let's start analyzing this Mishnah. Beautiful Mishnah, but it left us with a lot of questions. We start with the Mishnah that said, Machilos Hashem Musa. She goes and feeds him food that hasn't had Truma Samaisa taken off. It's Tevel. Tevel is an Issur Chomer. If you eat Tevel intentionally, so you chayv Misa Bidei Shemayim. So what are we talking about? The Gemara says, Hechidami, eat Yod. If he knows, so then let him take off Truma Samaisa. If his wife brings him Tevel, he knows it's Tevel. So it would be Mafra's Truma Samaisa. Don't blame her. You should take off Truma Samaisa. And eat the Lo Yoda. And if he doesn't know, she brings him food. He assumes it has Truma Samaisa taken off from it. And he eats it. So how does he know that it didn't have Truma Samaisa taken off from it? So where it says, Lo Tzricha, and this will be a pattern we'll have for all of these Yisroim in the Torah, the Armulei, she tells him, oh, Ploni Kohen Tikin Li Esakri, don't worry about it, this has no longer Tevel. I went to the Kohen, and the Kohen took all the Truma Samaisa from me, he kept the Truma for himself, he gave the Maisera, and everything's Mesukan, don't you worry. It's all perfectly good, it has the status of a good Kosher Chulin. And new. So he eats it, and then also Shailevi Shtakach Shikra, and then he goes to the Kohen and says, "Oh, I heard my wife came to you to take off Truma Samaisa." Said, "No, no, she didn't." So therefore, in this situation, the woman has done something terrible, and that's grounds for divorce without a ksuba. Next, it said Umimashmusho the Nida, that she had relations with him while she was a Nida, and that's grounds for divorce without a ksuba. Again, the Gemara says, hey, what are we talking about? If he knows that his wife is a nida, so then what are you doing having relations with her? It's your problem as much as it's hers. Your chayiv karis that having knowing relations with a nida. So how can you say that it's her fault that she now can be divorced without a ksuba? Don't have relations with her. And if you didn't know that she was a nida, you thought there was you made tara, and you had relations with a perfectly tara wife, so nismachilavi. So then you're allowed to rely upon the fact that she's not a nida. So once a woman goes to the mikvah, so husband has the right to assume that she's not a nida until she tells him that she's a nida. So again, what's the issue over here? And the Gemara explains why it's not an issue, because the Amar Chinah the Bar Kahana, Amar Shmuel, that Chinah Bar Kahana said the name of Shmuel, that a woman is trusted to say, I went to the mikvah, I counted the appropriate time, I went to the mikvah, and I'm tahara. So minayin lanida, she's the first liatzma. She doesn't have to go and make a public proof that she's tahara. We allow her to do this privately. Shenema, the pasuk says, v'sofru lo shiva shavu, she has to count the zayin nikiyim, and then it says she has to count them and goes to the mikvah. The sofra law, she herself counts it. She la davka has to go and tell the whole world. So law liatzma, she doesn't have to go and show her husband. Now today's day one of my Zayin Hakim. Today's day two of my Zayin Hakim. So she's trusted to do so. So again, the question is why in this situation is this grounds for divorce? The husband doesn't know that his wife really was a nida. So how does he know that he should go and divorce her? So Gemara says, Lotzricha, we're talking over here, the Amrele, she tells him, oh, Ploni Chacham Tia Liasada. She said, I had a Shaila, I had a Bedika cloth that was a question, and I went to the Talmud Chacham, and he said, no, this is not Dam, or this is Dam that is Tar. In those days, they would have Dam that is Tar, and therefore, I'm Mutaris to you. And they had relations. So for Ozal, he then goes the next day, he meets up with the Talmud Chacham, he says, oh, thank you, my wife went to you to ask a Shaila. So for Ozal Shaila, Vishtakach Shikwa. And the guy says, no, nobody ever came to me. Your wife never came to me with a Nida Shaila. Alternatively, everybody say, Mokhid Yehuda. Or we can say that this goes in accord with Rabbi Yehuda said. What did Rabbi Yehuda say? That Rabbi Yehuda, Huchsukha Nida Bishchaino Seha, Bala Lokel, La Mishum Nida. If everybody knows that she is a Nida. In other words, in those days, as Rashi points out, Sharul or Veshes, big day Nidus. Everybody had to know that somebody was a Nida in those days because of Tumah and Tara. Today, it's a very, very private thing. Nobody knows whether a man's wife is a Tahora to him, or he had relations with her last night or not. That's a very, very private thing. That's not something that's publicized. But in those days, yeah, she lived in a separate house. She wore separate colored begotten. They would wear red begotten. So everybody would know that she was a Nida because in terms of Tumah and Tara, if she sat down on a chair, that chair becomes a medrash l'tuma. If I go sit on that chair, then I become tummy as having contacted an avat tuma. So therefore, because of tuma and tara, which was extant in those days, very, very, very much, very, very, very practical, so everybody had to know. So everybody knows that she's wearing the big day nida, ulabala, armor tahora, but she tells her husband, no, I'm tahora. And they had relations, so in that situation, like everybody knows that she's Torah, and he has relations with her, so then he technically gets malchus over here, with chayiv kares. So if he was warned that your wife is a Nida and he has relations with her, so then he would get Malkus. So that's a fact, so to say. So here, everybody knows, according to Yehuda, that she was a Nida and he had relations with her. So in that situation, he's entitled to not pay the Ksuba. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah of Lo Kotsu L'Chala, that she doesn't take off Chala, which is one of the 24 Matnos Kahuna. So the Gemara says again, hey, if he doesn't, what are you talking about? Either the other, if he knows that his wife didn't take off challah, so go take off challah, nifrosh. Either lo yada, if he doesn't know that she didn't take off the challah, so me not that. So how does he know now that she didn't take off the challah? So again, the Gemara says lo tzricha. Again, a similar scenario that we've answered for the other cases. The Amalei, she says to him, ploni gabol tikin li asaisa, that I didn't need the dough, it was a big dough, and I went to the person who needs the dough, and he needed the dough for me, and he took off the challah. So therefore, this is mesukan. This the rest of this dough is perfectly permissible. Let's call it. And then Ba'azal Shaila, he goes to the gabel and says, "Thank you very much for taking off the challah on the big dough that my wife brought to you yesterday for eating." And he says, "Nothing doing. She never came to me with any dough, and therefore it turns out that she's a liar." In all of these situations, these are she's over das Moshe. These are all dinim daraisa that she caused him to sin, and therefore he has the right to go to divorce without paying the ksuba. And the last one was with Noderes and Mekayemus. If she makes Nedarim and doesn't fulfill those Nedarim, that's grounds for him to divorce her without paying the Ksuba. More questions? He says, why? What's so terrible? So where says, it's terrible. The Omar Mar, because Babo Nedarim Bonim Mason, as I pointed out in the mission, this is where I got it from, because of a woman transgressing her Nedarim by not fulfilling what she said she would make an Neder for, Rachmona Litzlan Bonim Mason. Now, exactly how this works, that's up to our Kodesh Baruch Hu. It's not something that we normally say that if I do something incorrect, that it could impact somebody else in terms of punishment, but in this situation specifically, it can impact the children. This is based upon the pasuk that we read down also from Koheles, Shenemar, Al titen es picha, lachti es bisorecha. And then we have the Vagomer. As oftentimes we have, the Vagomer is a critical point. So I'll read the entire pasuk. The pasuk says, Al yiten es picha, do not allow your mouth to cause lachti es bisorecha, to cause your body to go in sin. And then the rest of the pasuk says, don't say in front of the angel. Kishugagahi. Then, oh, this is an accident. Loma yiktsof elokim akolecha. Why should God be upset at me? The chibel es mase yodecha, and he will destroy mase yodecha. So the Ezo, back to Gemara now. The Ezo hein mase yodav shalodim, that Hakadosh Baruch Hu is going to destroy because you pronounced certain vows and you didn't fulfill them. This is heavy omer. Bonav uvbenosa. This Rachmana Litzlan could lead, by not fulfilling these Nedarim, they could lead Rachmana Litzlan to a man's sons and daughters, Rachmana Litzlan being taken away. Now, Rav Nachman Amar Yehocha, Rav Nachman, we have a different source for this, the Avon Nedarim Bonim Mason, because it says Lashav, which implies for naught, but it means because you swore at Tvila Shav, in other words, you didn't fulfill what you said you would do, he kasi es b'neichem. This passage from Yirmiyahu says, because you were doing things lashav incorrectly, and we darshin Rav Nachman that this is talking about not fulfilling your vows. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Rachmana Litzlan, hit your children. Lashav al iske shav. It means over here, because you didn't fulfill your vows, so therefore, Rachmana Litzlan, it could impact the sons and daughters of a person. More continues says, Tanya, within the following bright, so here Rav Meir Omer, Rav Meir would say, Kol ha-yodeya bi-ishto shenoder zinu ha-kayemes, yachzo v'yadirena. If a person knows that his wife makes nedarim and doesn't fulfill those nedarim, what should he do? Yachzo v'yadirena. He should go, and Rashi explains, mashma be'atzmo, konim olecho dover ploni. He should go make an additional neder on her. So he says, what? Yadirena? How does that help? By making an additional neder on her. So how does that go and make things better? So Gemara says, you're right. That's not the understanding. That's not what Rav Meir said. Rav Meir said, Ela yachzor v'yakni tena. As Rashi explains, Ein lo lo tziya elakach iskanana. It doesn't mean he goes and divorces. So what he does in this situation is, if he knows his wife makes an adarm and then doesn't keep them, what he should do is, so to say, get her angry at him. Yakni tena means let her get angry at him. And then, in this situation, Kidesha Tidor before him, she'll be upset with him, and she'll make her nether. Oh, because you did this to me, I'm making an nether, I'm not going to do this. Biyofila. But now, he can hear it's Biyom Shom'o. So this is the day that he hears the nether. He can go and be made for it. He doesn't tell her. So this way, she is not really transgressing her nether, because he was made for it. But in this way, he's going to make sure that his wife fulfills her nether, because there is no nether over here, and therefore, it's not going to be a transgression on her part. And this way, Baruch Hashem, she won't be transgressing the Dharm, and therefore the terrible tragedies of Banim Mesim won't apply. So this is what the opinion of Rav Meir was. But they told him, no, that's not a very good strategy. Ain Adam Dar im Nochosh Bekvifa. This is like living with a snake in a basket. You can't do this. This time you happen to have heard the nether because you got her angry, so she made the nether, and this time you heard it. And what happens all the other times when you weren't there, and she makes these nedarim, and then she doesn't fulfill them? So Rachman al-Islam, Banim Mesim, this isn't the way to go. You can't live with a snake in a basket. It's an expression to imply, as Rashi says, Sheki Shalo Yishomer Yashchenu. If you're not careful, the snake's going to bite you. So too over here, you can't guarantee that she's not going to make a nether and not fulfill it, and Rachman al-Islam caused trouble for the children. Now we quote a brisa that says almost the same thing. Now this brisa, according to Gir, so we have some machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. Tosus changed it around and says this is between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, so it parallels what we just said. Tanya, we learn the brisa. Hi, Rabbi Yehuda. Again, Gir, so we have Rabbi Yehuda. Some say it's Rabbi Meir. Tosus pointed out, Hi, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, Kol ayodeya biishto she'ena kotzo lo chala. If somebody knows for a fact that his wife doesn't take off the chala from the doughs that she's making, yachzo v'yafrish achara, go and be mafresh after, because you know she says she does, but you know she doesn't. So go take off the challah and no problem. So that's what Rav Yehuda or Rav Meir said. Amalo, they said no. Ein adam dar im nochash b'kvifa. You can't do this because invariably she's going to go and bake a dough one day. You're going to forget to take off the challah and you're going to eat tevel. You're going to eat the dough that didn't have the challah taken off of it. Now, this second brisa is a little bit different. This is talking about challah, and the first scenario that we had was talking about the neder. So, Man de mas ne lo aha, the one who said in the case of the challah that the husband can go and make sure that he never eats a dough that didn't have taking off challah from him, because he'll always take off the challah. So certainly koshkein aha. So certainly he would say that in regards to the nadarim, which is not as common. So the doughs, they're making bread every day. So if he's able to prevent himself from falling into that trap by just always making sure that he's mafrish challah no matter what, so then he certainly would say that the case of you can go and mayfair your wife's nedarim, that certainly would be allowable to live with the nochosh b'kvifa. So the author of the brisa, Rav Yehuda, or Rav Meir, would certainly in this brisa also be of the opinion of Rav Meir that said, yachzor v'yach nitena, and this way you're guaranteed that you'll never have a wife that makes vows, and certainly if you can do this for the challah situation, you can do this for the vows. But the one who taught us the case about the vows, sometimes you're going to forget yourself, so he doesn't necessarily hold. Rav Meir in the Mishnah is Lav Davka, holding like Rav Yehuda in the Braisa. Now the Gemara goes on to discuss the next section of the Mishnah, which was the Das Yehudis, the Ezohi Das Yehudis. What are these things that the holy women of Israel have accepted upon themselves in certain places? Again, you go by each custom. It's not Lav Davka, there's one custom full of Kaiser, but in those places, if the holy women of Klal Yisrael, where Noah goes certain ways, so then if you go against that, the husband has the right to go and divorce you without paying the ksuba. So we had said, the first one was, Yotza v'Rosha Perua, that she goes out without covering her hair. Gemara says, what? That's a minhag? Rosha Perua d'Raisi? This is the d'Raisi. The pasuk says, d'Ksiv. Ufora es rosh ha'isha. This is referring to the sota, that one of the ways that women novel her, the ways that we embarrass her, because she acted in such a terrible way, so we go and we uncover her hair, implying that under all other circumstances, you're not allowed to have your hair covered. The time that Rishmael learned the base medish Rabbi Shmuel, that this is the asara, this is the warning, livnos yisrael, for the Jewish women, shelo yetzu b'feru ha'rosh, that they shouldn't go out with pru'ei rosh, they shouldn't go out without their hair being covered. So one says, you're right. There are rice, 100%, a married woman is not allowed to go out without her hair being covered. And we turn to the Omid Beis, Ayin Beis, Omid Beis. But that means, Kalosa Shapir Dummy. But that, in general, on the Din Daraisa, it would be sufficient if it was covered up with this Kalosa. Rashi explains Kalosa is a sal, a certain type of a basket. It's a head covering, Sheishlo Milamata Beis Kibble. It has some sort of a receptacle in it, lahomo birosha, that you can put things into it in her head, ubeis kibble milamala, it also has a receptacle in the bottom, lo seis bo pelach upishta, that you can put certain types of things in it as well. A pelach and pishtan are part of the sewing, and part of the weaving. So therefore, it is a functional head covering, but that's the din d'oraisa, that's enough. But some of the hair could possibly be seen through that. And therefore, Das Yehudis was Afilu Kalosa Nami Yosser, that they were stricter and said, this type of head covering is not enough. So on a Daraisa level, it's enough. And along came the holy women of Israel and said, no, let's cover up even more. So that's why this is called Das Yehudis, because it's referring to the additional coverings that they would have in addition to the regular covering that the Torah provides for. Okay. Where it says, Amar Ravasi, Amar Yochanan, Kalosa, Ein Bamishum, Perua Rosh. If a woman is wearing this Kalosa on her head, so then she's not called Perua Rosh. Granted, it may not follow the minhag of Das Yehudis, but she can't be called Perua Rosh. Habe Bar Reb Zera was there, however, questioned this, and he said, Hecha, depends. Where is this woman being? Where is this head covering satisfactory, this kalosa, that she's not called Perua Rosh? If you're going to tell me, Ilema Bashuk, she's going out to the public marketplace, so then Das Yehudisi. So we just said the kalosa is not enough. The common practice amongst the holy women was that they would require an additional covering beyond this kalosa. So obviously, it's talking about that she wasn't out in public. Ella, we said that the kalosa is adequate, Ella Bechatzer, in her private type of a chotzer, in a private type of a courtyard. And wait a second, in that situation, why is she even in a kalosa? Imkain, loy nachta basli avram avinu, she yoshev estachas bala. In this situation, if you're saying that even in your private courtyard, you require a kalosa in order not to be pura rosh, so then there's no Jewish woman alive that will be able to, so to say, stand up to that level of tznias, because in your private house, you're allowed to uncover your hair. As Rashi points out, Diva Masli in Kain, the Bechotzer Yesh Bo Mishum Priya. If you're telling me that in a courtyard there is this din of also covering your head, so then essentially every husband would have to divorce their wife, because the women uncover their hair in their own houses, in their own courtyard. The courtyard is like a house; it's a private area. So one says, no, this isn't a problem. This heavy bar, this kasha, as Rashi says, is a lashon maksha that Rav Zera asked, is not a kasha. Because Omer Abaya of Yitim Rav Kana, either Abaya or Rav Kana, answered it as follows. You're talking here that the woman went, mechotzer lechotzer. She was going from one private courtyard to another private courtyard, but she's going v'derech mavui. She's going through a mavui. As Rashi says, the lo shrich rabbin, there aren't a lot of people over there, and that's why the Das Yehudis of having the additional covering wasn't required. But she shouldn't be pru'a rosh in that area, because there'll be some people there, so the kalos is adequate. So in the public areas, the kalos is not enough. She needs to have an additional covering. That's Das Yehudis. In the private areas of her house or courtyard, she doesn't require anything. And in these areas, which are somewhat private, but there are some people over there, then the kalos is enough. You don't require the additional Das Yehudis head covering. Then we said that another example of a woman who's not doing appropriate Das Yehudis would be if she was Vitova Bashuk, or some have the Girsa Bashok, that she was spinning her wool in either the marketplace, the shuk, or by her thigh, by shuk. So Rav Yehuda Mishmuel, Bimara Zrosel, Vnei Adam. So Rav Yehuda Mishmuel says, the reason why this is not sneas, it's not consistent with being an Erlich, a Jewish woman, a Das Yehudis, is because when she's spinning in public like this, so it exposes her arms. Rav Chisda of Maravimi has a different reason, and that may be the Girsa of Bashok, Betova, Virod, Keneged, Panea. Panea is a euphemism that used for Panea Shomata. So this is referring to her genital area. So when she's spinning, so the threads go down in between her legs, and this causes a person's eye to glance and follow the thread, and therefore that's not considered a sneeze way, and that's what's a vitova by shok in her thigh. So that's not proper to do this in public, where people may end up looking at her thigh, looking at her legs. Even though they're covered, it's still an improper thing. It's lack of sneeze. That's the Das Yehudis. Of course, if it was uncovered, that would be an Yisodar Aisa. Then the Mishnah is quoted as saying, "When the Bereshim called him, she's also over. She's violating this Das Yehudis if she goes speaks to every single man out there in the street. Lavdafka, every single man, but she speaks to any man without a purpose." So Rav Yehuda Mishmuel, again, Rav Yehuda Mishmuel is the one who comments a lot on these Mishnayos, and he says, "Mesacheches im bachurim." She's having inappropriate conversations with young men. This we would say in the vernacular would be she's flirting with these young men. She's having casual, lighthearted, inappropriate conversations for a married woman to have with these bachurim, with these young men. More continues says, I'm a Rabbi Bar Chana. Rabbi Bar Bar Chana said, Zimno Chodo one time. Hava Kozilna Basrei Rav Ukva. One time I was walking alongside behind Rav Ukva and Chazite Lahai Arvya, and I saw that there was this one Arab woman, Dava Yasa, she was sitting there in the public area, Koshadja Pilcha Betova, and she was spinning her threads in the public area, which we said is not Das Yehudis, but that's what this Arab woman was doing. Virod Kineget Panel. And she had the threads going down in between the legs. Again, Panea Shomata. So she sees us and she wants to engage us in inappropriate conversation. So Kivin de Chazisinon, Psikte le Pilcho Shedise. What she did was she made it look like her threads, her spindle. The Pelech is the spindle. It's also known as a maseches. So one of the reasons we call maseches, it always says because they would throw it back and forth from one side to the other to allow the threads to be interwoven. So that's a maseches, would go back and forth. So she threw her pilcha, the spindle, in front of us, so we would go and pick it up and then engage her in a conversation. So Amrali, she said to me, Nu Ulam, Ulam is a young man, right? Ulma is a young lady. So Ulam, Hadli Pelech, can you please pick up my spindle for me? So Rav Ukva made the comment at this point in time, oh my boy, he said about this woman, Rav Ukva said, Milsa, he said something about her. What does he say about her? So this Milsa that he said about her was that she was inappropriate. This would be inappropriate behavior for a Jewish woman to go and act in this fashion. Mark continues and says, what does it mean, my Omar Ba? So Ravina Omar, Tova Bashuk Omar Ba. He said exactly this, that she's spinning in the public, and that's inappropriate for a Jewish woman. Rabbanan Amre, Medaberesim Kol Adam Omar Ba. He said, this woman who's trying to engage you in conversation, that's the inappropriate thing. So it was either one of these two or both of these two things, love that, because they're arguing with each other. When you have the Lashon of Ravina Omar, and then you have Rabbanan Amre, it's not an argument. If you had Omer Ravina and then you have Omer Rabbanim, then they seem to be arguing with each other. When you have the name first and then afterwards they said, so it means it's a separate statement. So Lav Davka, the Ravina and the Rabbanim are arguing with each other. They're each saying that she did two things wrong. One was that she was spinning in the public market like this inappropriately and talking to people inappropriately as well. Then we have Avishol Omer. Abishol said, Afa Makalelis Yoldo Bifonim. We said in the Mishnah that Abishol said that if you go and curse your in-laws in front of the husband, that's inappropriate. So I'm going to review the Mishul. Again, review the Mishul tells us, Makalelis, when a person over here is being Makalel, the woman is being Makalelis, we have the Girsa Yolidov, the ones who gave birth to him, but the more correct Girsa, as it's brought down in the Agos Agra, would be Yoldov. And again, the Gosh Grod says, Bibnei, we have the Girsa Molidov. The Girsa should be Moldov between for his descendants. So Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel is telling us over here that to curse your in-laws in front of your husband's children, that is a terrible thing, and that's going against Das Yehudis. Simonech, and how do you remember this idea that even the children of your husband, you can't curse the in-laws in front of them? It's based upon the Pasuk, famous Pasuk, Ephraim, Menashe, Kruvein, Vishimon, Yuli, that the grandchildren have the same status as the children. In other words, you can't curse your in-laws in front of your husband, and you can't curse your in-laws in front of your husband's child as well. And I'm a rabbi. Rabbi said, the Amrulay, what's an example of this curse? So she says to her husband's son, Nechle Arye Lesaba Biapebre. She says to her husband's son, let a lion go and eat your grandfather, and she says this in front of her husband's son, that would be this example of this going against the Das Yehudis. Mark continues and quotes the Mishnah, Rabbi Tarfon Omer, Afa Kolonis, if a woman is a loud speaker, she's a very noisy person, so then that's also going against violating this Das Yehudis. So the Gemara asks, what exactly do you mean by a loud woman? My Kolonis. So I'm going to review the Mishul. Again, review the Mishul tells us, B'mashmas Kola al iske tashmish. So she goes and talks very loudly about asking her husband to have relations with her. As Rashi points out, Adibra Maskel al iske tashmish, Kishimedaber imo al iske ona, Meriva imo, when the husband is talking with his wife about relations, so Meriva imo, she fights with him, Umishmas l'shchenav, and it's able to be heard by the neighbors, V'hu bosh badover, and it embarrasses very, very much. So therefore, she's very loud when it comes to personal matters, and the neighbors can hear this, so that's a reason for divorce. B'masnisatan, we learn in the Braisa that it's something else. B'mashmeshes b'chotzer zu, she has relations with her husband in a courtyard. V'nishma kola b'chotzer cheres, and her voice is heard elsewhere. So Rashi explains, v'nishma kola shetashmish koshelo b'tzuekes. It's very painful. It's a condition called dyspareunia, where having relations is very painful to her. So she yells out, and this is able to be heard elsewhere. And as a result, this is very embarrassing to her husband. More questions, however, the Gemara says, if this is a painful relations issue, so then b'nisnaye gabe mumin b'masnisin. So then later in the perek, where we talk about physical blemishes, mumim, that are grounds for divorce, and not to give the ksuba to the woman. If the husband didn't know about certain mumim, then she has him, so he's allowed to divorce her without paying the ksuba. It's either a mekach toz, and they're not considered ever to be married, or he's allowed to go and divorce her without having to pay the ksuba. So this would be one of those situations where theoretically she'd be enlisted with the mumim later in the parrot. So one says, you're right, ela machvarta, therefore that can't be the reason here, and the reason that we just brought down from this brisa is incorrect. That would be the Ela Machvarta. It should be white. It should be clear. Kedushin Meikar. The reason that Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel said that she is very loud and the neighbors can hear her talking with her husband about, fighting with her husband about whether they should have relations or not. And this is very embarrassing to the husband. And that's why he's allowed to divorce her without paying the ksuba. This is a good break point. With this, we conclude today's shiur.